your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We're on our last interview on this topic of mystic order. And I have with me today Marta Getty. She's from the United States, living in Italy, and we are now both in Australia. So this is world community at its best. So Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Phyllis. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're here to talk about our theme of our conversation is mystic order, but I would really love it if you could tell our listeners your story of how you met Reiki and, of how you met Reiki.
All right. Well, my first experience of Reiki was before I knew about Reiki. And I was in Canada, and I had just by some chance been introduced to Wanya Tuan. And we were sitting together, and she, for some reason, we reached out to each other, and we were holding hands. It was just the strangest experience for me. In those days, those kind of things didn't usually happen, for me at least. And she was looking at me, and one of the things she said to me was, in a few months, you're going to meet your teacher. I thought, my goodness, my teacher of what? And then she started talking about healing, and I had had a feeling of healing in me for all of my life because it runs in my family. My grandmother and my great-grandmother and my father all have that energy in their hands. But at the time, I hadn't actually ever had a class of Reiki. I didn't know anything about it. I had just heard the word once, and I knew that I was going to be taught Reiki because my teacher, who was Bethel Fay, had already asked if I would organize a workshop for her, and I had said yes, and that was in process at the time. But it was very odd to be with somebody else who said to me, you know, there's something that's coming for you that's very special, and you will be finding what's your pathway in your life, which is exactly what I had seen when I heard the word Reiki, was the sense of it being a road for all of my life. It would be my life till the end of it. So it was a very powerful moment. And then when the class happened, of course, there was there were other people around me. It was a very simple experience where Bethel came and taught so briefly what Reiki was about. I had a demonstration in the air of the Reiki positions and then four initiations. And that was it. And I kept waiting for more to happen, but it didn't. And then so when she, because it was her style and because that's what she had experienced, she said, well, if you'd like me to come and if you'd like to take second degree, I'm still here so I could do second degree. I had never done a treatment for anyone and never received a treatment from anyone at that point. And I said, yes. And I was thinking, partially I was thinking that because I wanted to learn something. I thought maybe there was something to learn. I'd already studied healing, and everybody had all these rules and all these expectations and all these things that they did. But that was, you know, it was completely different. It was something so very simple. And so I said yes to second degree, and she gave us some symbols to memorize. And the next day she did an initiation, and very briefly, in less than an hour, said, this is what you do with these symbols. And so that was the end of it. And after she left, I was sitting on the couch, and I remembered thinking to myself, now what was that? What did I just spend all that money on? It was my rent money. So and that was my experience then, was that somebody knocked on my door and wanted a treatment. And I didn't know they wanted a treatment. They just said that the neighbor had told them that I could help them, and I had never seen this woman before. So I said, okay, I don't know what I can do. And then I remembered that I just had this Reiki class. I'd finished it just 3 hours before, and Bethel had gone home, and I was alone. And I thought, okay, well, I'll try it. But, you know, I didn't really know what that meant, so I just sort of told her to come up to my rebirthing room, because I did rebirthing at the time. And I had a massage bed, so I laid it out, and she laid on the table, and there was a pillow under her knees and her head. And so I put my hands on her eyes, and then I had my first question. What now? They started to get hot, and my hands started to get hot. So I thought, well, stay there until they're not hot anymore. Well, that took about 20 minutes. And that happened on all the treatment positions on her body. So it was the longest treatment I think I've ever given. So I think it must have been 3 or 4 hours.
Holy
and it was
dear.
After midnight when she left. But it was a marvelous experience because I got excited. I had this wonderful feeling of joy that this energy, whatever it was, I had no idea what it was, but whatever it was coming through me. It really worked. And then I thought, well, I'd like to do this again. And I didn't have any idea how you'd ever get anybody to come and have a treatment, much as I didn't even know what it felt like because I hadn't had a treatment. But the crazy thing is the next morning, somebody called me at 9 o'clock and wanted a treatment. They heard about it from this lady who I never saw again. And from then on, I had 3, 4, 5 people every day for at least 2 months, 7 days a week.
That's amazing. And I have to ask Marta what year this was, because it's very significant.
Uh-huh. Well, that was in 1980, May of 1980.
Yeah. So this was at the what we might call the beginning.
Yes, yes.
Of this particular era of Reiki. So, continue.
Well,
please.
I have to say, though, I didn't know it was an era of Reiki. I just thought it was Reiki, and I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think of doing it for myself unless I had something wrong. So if there was a burn or something, I could put my hands on it. But I never thought of doing a treatment for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And people kept saying, you have these wonderful hands. This feels so great. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I was thinking, what are they talking about? Because I didn't... I would have treatments from other people, and so I would understand that it was a wonderful experience. But somehow, I didn't ever think of myself as being part of that experience, that I could do it for me.
Uh-huh. Right.
So it took me a while to learn that part. But it was just wonderful.
Yeah, great. Well, Bethel was a very special person, and she was a part of this group in British Columbia who was initiated all at the same time, Barbara Brown, Wanya Twan, Rick Bachner, and Bethel. And they were quite a group of people. That's interesting.
I've always thought of Bethel as being a legend in her own time.
Oh, yes. She was amazing. And so then you continued your Reiki practice and eventually became a master. I initiated you as a master in
1981. September of 81.
So you were on the fast track.
Yes. Very fast. My head was still spinning afterwards.
Uh-huh. And did you meet Hawaio Tutata?
Yes, I did. It was a very special experience for me. I didn't realize how important it was then because I was so young in my practice and also very young with my years. I was 35 when I met her. And because of that, I did not understand the incredible gift that I received in spending time with her. And I asked her, I was just really terrible. I guess I was like any young person, anything. I had a zillion questions. And I asked her all of them. Well, if she was there, she must have been exhausted. And she was so patient with me. She answered every single question I asked her, most of which I really didn't need to know the answer to. Because they
didn't. Can you give us an example?
Well, yes. I asked her, I asked her if Reiki was a religion.
Uh-huh.
Well, I wasn't a very religious person. I think I was afraid that there was a religion hidden underneath it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know for sure. And so what she said to me was that Reiki was not a religion. It was something that underpinned everything. That energy helped people find their own pathway, whatever it would be. She said that it was, you know, like if somebody had a religion already, that it would strengthen them in their religion if they wanted to stay in that. And sometimes people didn't have a spiritual pathway or spiritual direction, and Reiki would do something that helped them find that spiritual pathway.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I didn't understand that. Mm-hmm. It took me years to really get what that meant to me. because after time passed, I discovered that Reiki became my spiritual pathway. It wasn't meant that it should be for everybody, but it answered my own needs inside for that. And so I didn't understand, and yet later on, because I had the experiences I did, I harked back to what Mrs. Takata had told me. It was very powerful for me. There were lots of other questions, too. I don't remember all of them right now. But whenever I have a moment when I need an answer that I ask her about then, even if I don't remember it before, the moment I have that question, her voice comes up in my mind telling me what she thought or what she felt was correct. And so she's been a continuing teacher for me for nearly 30 years now.
Right. Now, that happens to me, too. I think it's very odd that she can do that, but she does. So what do you think she would have thought about us using this word mystic in relationship to Reiki?
Well, I can only speculate because I don't really know. And at the same time, I don't think that she would have talked about it. For me, listening back in my mind to some of the conversations that we had, I never heard her talk about spirituality, ever, of any sort. And for me, in my life, mystic order connects really strongly with spirituality. I always thought of it in that way, my spiritual connection with all that is. And I just couldn't imagine her talking about that. It seemed to be something held inside, a kind of a richness that was held inside. It was a personal thing. So I never even would have asked her about it, but I don't know why I wouldn't have asked her about that aspect right now. She did say one thing that where she used the word spiritual, and it took me a long time to remember that, but during the time that I was there with her, she taught a class, and there was a talk one evening, and she said all these beautiful things, and there was a woman who came up, and she said that she wanted to do the class, but she didn't have any money. And I said, oh, I'll talk to Mrs. Takata about this, and I'll ask her what she wants to do. And I asked her if she took payments or if she did something different or gave concessions on prices for people who didn't have the money. And she said, no, if the person doesn't have the money, they're not ready right now to do this. They need to do that. And I felt really offended by that. I was of a mind that said, give it away, make it easy, make it simple for the person to do it. And when I talked to Mrs. Takata afterwards, I asked her why she would do it that way. And she said, Reiki was something so deeply spiritual, it couldn't be sold. And when we start bargaining on prices, it's like selling something rather than understanding what it was really, that it was so deeply spiritual, it couldn't be sold. That was a phrase that has stuck with me ever since the beginning. And it's helped me in moments when I was tempted to just do Reiki because of the money rather than do Reiki because that's what the need was from that person inside, and to really be there as a guide for them in that moment, not as their teacher that continued forever, but to be their guide in that moment because it was such a precious and deep experience.
Beautiful story. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's time for us to take a break. We'll be back after the station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Never before in the history of live radio have such illuminating revelations challenged everything we thought we knew about the hidden realms. This exceptional mystic, seer, and healer creates a truly amazing bridge across the chasm that has separated man for eons from the unseen worlds of mystery. Join host Al Mean for an extraordinary and enlightening hour by Walking Between the Worlds on Voice America's Seventh Wave Network. Walking Between the Worlds airs live every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Marta Getty. She is one of the first masters that I initiated, and one of the things that was so unique in this time period of the 1980s, especially the early 80s, was that I didn't know this at the time, but now I can look back and say that I was really riding on the energy of my grandmother and her way of being with Reiki. And I think that one of the things this gift gave me was a way to really understand that you can trust Reiki and at the same time you can learn from Reiki. So it became this great paradox where if I learned with Reiki, it would take more time. But if I trusted Reiki, I would follow what I felt was the best thing to do. So Marta has been one of those people that has been in my life since 1980, and it's been a very fascinating process to watch her grow as well as myself, and to listen to this admonition of my grandmother, which said, let Reiki teach you. And for sure we've both been in that particular frame a lot. Let Reiki teach you, and then kind of scream silently into the void. So, with that particular intro, Marta, I'm really interested in your thoughts about mystic order. One of the things that has happened, of course, is that I've introduced words to what I received from Hawaii Otakata, both spoken and unspoken, about the practice of Reiki, and in including this piece about mystic order, I feel like it has been this kind of carrot, you know, in front of everybody. If we do everything right, then we get to mystic order. And somehow, this is kind of the feeling that I have. And at the same time, I really have no words for it. So I'm very interested to know in your 30 years of experience, how you would place mystic order in this practice.
Well, that's a really interesting question for me. I've thought about actually that a lot in certain respect. When I first started thinking about Reiki in sense of different sections, which was, you know, in the 80s or late 80s, there was a part of me that saw that there was a healing part, there was a growing part, a growth, personal development part, and then there was something that I thought of as my daily practice with Reiki. I didn't give it another kind of name, it was just a simple name, my daily practice. And that left, I could always see that there was a circle with seemingly four sections in it, and there was always this missing label in one section, and it took me a long time to grow into the fact that that was, for me, my spirituality, which seemed to be the umbrella for all of my practice. But if I'd known that at the beginning, I wouldn't have understood it. I wouldn't have had any sense of that until I had the experiences.
Right.
And it has been so important to me. It's probably the most important part of Reiki for my life. It has been the thing that has pushed me to grow in every way. I could say that my daily practice, which I've done a daily treatment now since the late 80s for myself, almost every day. And I've treated thousands of people, and I've done, you know, classes where there, you know, probably the total is in the thousands. I don't know how many students I've got, but it's been, all of those things were experiential and taught me, but they brought me to a place, as you said, that it's without words. And it's something that fills me, fills my soul. And what I discovered was that not everybody experiences the same thing. It was really interesting for me. Here in Australia, this is the time for Australia stories. Many years ago, I drove north from Adelaide to Port Augusta, and I was driving an old VW camper van. I bought it from somebody for $3,000. And I was driving up there, and there was this hurricane. I don't know what kind of storm, but it was like the level of a hurricane. And I had a friend in Melbourne that said, "Oh, this is going to be Valentine's Day soon, and I'd like to think about you on Valentine's Day, so I'm going down to the beach, and I'm going to take a bottle of champagne and think about you while I'm there as you're doing your trip." Okay, so I was romantically involved, I have to say, at the time, and was madly in love. So here I am driving north on this road in the middle of this, what turns out to be like a hurricane, although I just thought it was a windstorm with a bit of rain. And at one point, I pulled over to the side of the road because I just couldn't contain myself in the car anymore. And I stepped out, and there was this incredible experience as if I was one with everything. My heart expanded so much that I almost couldn't contain it within my body. The sky was beautiful. The air was beautiful. And there was nothing wrong. Everything was in balance in my life. It was so exciting and wonderful. But I wasn't thinking this is exciting and wonderful until afterward. So then I thought, oh my gosh, this person back in Melbourne who's thinking of me, you know, it's sunset on the beach on Valentine's Day, you know, this is wonderful. They can't help but feel the same experience as me and how wonderful it is. And so then I thought, oh, this is so brilliant. I'm going to sit down and just for a little while send Reiki to this person. Which I did. It was a very powerful experience, one of the most wonderful Reiki experiences. Not because it was strong, but because I felt so full and so complete in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I thought, surely this is the best Reiki treatment this person has ever received. And they're thinking of me because they can see this light all over everywhere because I'm transmitting it to them just with my whole heart. So then I eventually got back in the car and drove on to Port Augusta and had my adventures, and I called on the telephone after the phones were back up the next day after the hurricane was over. And I called this person and talked to them on the phone, and I said, how was sunset last night on the beach? And he said to me, I didn't go to the beach. I said, you didn't? And he said, no. He said, I stayed home and I was waiting because I thought you might call me. And his whole experience was that he might have called me. He didn't have any light. He didn't get any sense of Reiki flowing to him at all. And I felt like it was one of the most transformative experiences in my life. So at that point in time. And that's the moment when I realized that my experience is not necessarily everybody else's experience. It belongs to me. And it was a deep, deep spiritual experience that I could not find a true description for. I mean, these words that I just gave are not really what that experience was about. Mm-hmm. And that, it's for me, it's a really strong description of what's always happened with Reiki in my life. It does something, and then later I try to figure out what it was. I don't have words for it. I don't have anybody saying, this is what you're supposed to do, this is what you're supposed to learn. I just have this experience of Reiki filling me, and then I connect in some way. And it's been, well, I guess the term might be magical, but that's not quite what I would really, really want to say. I wouldn't say it's like magic, because we think of a magic wand that goes zot, and you're fixed or something. Instead, it's more like a security or a richness or a wholeness. Mm-hmm. And I still don't really have words for it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. So how would you define or describe a mystic?
A person who's a mystic is what you're talking about.
Right? Well, or mystical experience.
Mystical experience. My sense of someone who's a mystic would be someone who is searching and experiences happen along the way that are really hard to explain.
Uh-huh.
Things happen that somehow stimulate that person to grow in some very deep way. It can't even be shared within a group or, you know, two people talking together. It's something that happens inside, and that person begins to look outward and see inward at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So when I think about mystic experiences are... they're totally unexpected. There's something unexpected that teaches and pushes us to grow in some way. And I don't think they just come to people who are mystics on mountains who sit in caves and look for something to happen. I mean, I'm exaggerating, obviously. I think that it's something that happens when our eyes are open inside, not the eyes open outside.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking of another experience that I had here in Australia that still to this day stimulates me to grow. And at the same time, I never have been able to totally explain why it happened.
Uh-huh.
And that was on one of my...
Yeah,
yes.
But before you get into that, do you mind? So I'm wondering, do you consider yourself a mystic?
No, I've never thought about myself as a mystic.
Really? But the experience that you shared with us about this storm and everything, and then your, what we might call, definition of a mystic seems to match. Is that true for you, or...?
Well, I think that those things do match, but I've never thought about myself as a mystic.
Uh-huh.
I just had my experiences and tried not to define them.
See, this is really interesting because I feel that this is one of the things that's very important about a mystic, that one accepts the extraordinary and without explanation. So if I had a characteristic, this would be one of them, because I think that a lot of people have what we might call mystic experiences, but they explain them away by using some outer realm possibility. Like, as a joke, we might say, oh yeah, that was the stars, or that was, you know, the way that the planets were aligned or something. But deep inside, it feels like being a mystic might be more of a posture of how to view these experiences rather than actually whether you have the experience or not. Do you know what I'm saying?
Maybe everybody
has experiences, especially Reiki people. Maybe we all have these kind of experiences. But if when we have the experience, we try to explain it away through, you know, physics or astrology or... that must be so-and-so, or this must be... And with another possibility is what you did, is to leave it alone and then just accept it. And that acceptance is really a tough path because we're so used to answering the question, why?
It's true.
Yeah.
But you know what? This is probably the second time in my life I've ever talked about that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the other time I was trying to figure out what it meant. But, you know, there is a part of me that wants to define things, wants to know the answer. But for some reason, that was not an event that I could ask those questions about.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think of it as a mystic experience.
Uh-huh.
I just thought of it as an amazing experience that I had.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, another station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Marissa, are you ready yet? I know you can hear me. You are not missing school again. Marissa! You trying to be a nobody or something? Let's go! All right then. Hit it. I know you can hear this! Hey guys, move closer! That's it! Girl, I am not leaving!
Hey, whatever it takes, don't let your friends drop out. A real friend can make all the difference.
Cut that noise, yo! I'm coming!
Took you long enough. Thanks for the help, guys.
For more ways to help, go to OperationGraduation.com. A public service message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing, broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here today with Marta Getty of Eugene, Oregon, who used to live in Australia, then moved to Italy, and now we're in Australia together and speaking. And when we're in a certain country, I think it brings up experiences from that country. So, excuse me. We were just speaking about Marta's experience of driving. Where were you driving from?
Driving from Adelaide to Port Augusta.
So what's the terrain like?
Well, where I was pretty flat, actually.
Was it the outback, or is it?
Well, it was pretty outback in that place. I was between the two points.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And there were distant hills around, and there were some salt flats that I passed, and dead trees. But it was pretty barren in some ways, rather than full of trees like
uh-huh.
some other parts of Australia.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So just to get a kind of a visual of what you were doing out in the storm and so on. So, I don't know, I would call it a mystic experience from my point of view, just because you had this experience of oneness.
Yes. Yes. And Australia has stimulated that a lot for me. There's something about this land with its open sky and open hearts as well that somehow stimulates a person to go into a deeper place. And maybe it's not about people, but also the people. It's about the land being so ancient that somehow it holds the space for something out of the ordinary and in the sense of mystic experiences, as you would put it.
Uh-huh. And you were going to share one of these experiences?
Another one. Yes, well, in my early years of coming to Australia, the very first year I came was in 1983. It was in March, and it was really hot. It was around Ash Wednesday when they'd had all those terrible fires. And it was also the same time that Charles and Diana were down here having their honeymoon.
And I was Charles and Diana
from England, the Prince Charles and Princess Diana. They were here on their honeymoon, and I happened to be watching the news that evening, and the people I was staying with were away, and there was this newscast, and I saw there this incredibly beautiful orange rock. And they were being helicoptered onto that rock. And I saw that place. It was almost like I didn't even really notice them very much. But I just had this incredible hunger to go to that place. And I had really no idea what it was or where it was. So when my friends came home, I said, I saw this really interesting newscast, this place. I have no idea where it is. But I think it's here in Australia, and I'd like to know, you know, what it is. I just feel like I must go visit it. So they told me it was in the center of Australia, and you know, a very famous landmark all around the world. It's called Uluru. So As time went on, while I was visiting, there was no way that I could fly up there and go visit this place that just suddenly, just totally encapsulated my heart and just pulled me with everything. So I planned to come back the next year because I was asked to come again to teach classes here. And I planned to go there. And there was another Reiki master, Mary McFadgen, who had made my acquaintance because we had done some things together. And I said to her, do you know anything? I know you've been in Australia. Can you give me any ideas about Australia? Because there's something I want to do there. I want to go to this place called Uluru. It's an orange rock. I mean, it sounds like a rock, but it's something much more massive than that. And she said, well, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you. Well, what she did is she sent me some names and addresses of people in the center of Australia where this rock was. And she said, why don't you write to these people and maybe you can have a class or something up there and then maybe you can go out and see the rock. And I said, okay, great. So I wrote to these people and they didn't write back to me. They didn't do anything for a long time. And then one of them wrote back. It was a man from Alice Springs. And he wrote me and said, well, I'd like you to come. I've heard about Reiki, and I'd like to do a Reiki class myself. And I think maybe I've got a couple more friends who'd like to do a Reiki class. So come, and you can stay with me, and we'll do this class. And I thought to myself, this is wonderful. This is just wonderful. I was so happy. But then she'd given me the name also of somebody who was working out at the rock at that time, out at Uluru. But in those days, they only had radio phones. You couldn't call somebody on the telephone. You had to write letters. So I wrote her a letter, and I asked if possibly she could give me some suggestions. And she wrote back to me eventually, and she told me that she would be pleased if I would come and stay with her, and she would show me around the rock. I was just stunned, because it's like everything just laid itself out like a plan in front of me. There was no real block anywhere. Mm. So I went. But what happened was, I had planned to go on the 22nd of March in 1984. I'll never forget the date. And I woke up 3 or 4 days before, and I knew I had to go. Instead of the 22nd, I had to go on the 21st. And I had no way of telling this person who was out at the rock that I was coming because of the radio phones. So I made my plans. I went to Alice Springs. I took a flight. I had a flight scheduled. And they called me on the intercom and they said, Mrs. Getty, can you please come up and talk to us at the desk? So I went up and they said, we are really sorry, but I know you're supposed to take a jet out to Uluru, but unfortunately there's no other passengers. So we would like to send you out there in a Cessna. It was like a little tiny plane. They were worried I'd be upset about it. So I went out the rock with that airplane, and these people flew me around the rock. They opened the windows so I could take photographs from the air. I mean, it was the most amazing thing. And then we landed. And I thought to myself, how am I ever going to find that person out here in this enormous desert? I had no concept of how enormous the center of Australia is, or also how beautiful it is. So we landed, and I got out, and I thought, okay, now I know that somehow I'll find her. And I turned around, and there was a gateway there. It was a very rudimentary gateway, because we probably didn't get that many flights at that time. And there was a woman standing there. And I walked up to her and I said, are you, and I won't say her name because I don't feel like I want to publicize her name without having asked her first, are you this person that I'm supposed to meet? And she looked at me and she said, yes. And I said, how did you know I was going to be here? And she said, you came and sat on my bed last night and told me to be here a day early. And I thought, oh my God. I mean, I was totally stunned, but it was not, although everything just fell into a special place, I didn't think of this as a mystical experience. I just thought of this as an interesting experience, and here I am being a tourist out at the rock, even though there's this deep, deep pull to be here. So she took me around, and I saw the sunset on the rock. It was glowing. It was beautiful. And she said to me, what do you want to do here anyway? And suddenly, instead of this being this friendly invitation, it was like a confrontation. It's like, what are you doing here? The underlying message was, what are you coming here to take away? So I was a little taken back, and I just said to her, well, I would just like to climb to the top of the rock, because my aunt did that when she was much younger, and I would also like to do a tobacco ceremony on top of the rock. I have some Native American blood, and that's something that was important to me. I like doing tobacco ceremony. And I'd also like to meet the women elders of the tribe. And she just looked at me, shocked, and she said, well, you can climb the rock. And she said, you can do whatever this tobacco ceremony thing is. But she said, you can't meet the women elders. I said, oh, okay, fine. Why not? And she said, well, because they want people to come back. And they want people to show that they're really committed to this place and that they really are following a certain pathway before they want to meet them. And I said, oh, that's fine. You know, that's great. I didn't really know what I wanted until you asked. And that's fine. I don't have any investment in meeting these people. So it's great. And so she said, fine. So the next day in the morning, early, she said, well, if you'd like, you can drive around with me because I have duties here with the Aborigines. But you can't get out of the car. You can't open the door. So just sit inside and just watch. You can't do anything else. So I said, okay, no problem. I'm really curious. I'd never seen anything like that before in my life. And it was so beautiful because we went around and I saw from inside the car all these beautiful groups of people doing everything that they did in their lives. I mean, it's like being inside of a glass box and having life all around and being able to observe it without interfering. It was beautiful. And then at the last, before we went home for lunch, you know, lunch is always important, she said, I have one last stop to make. And when we stopped, she said, don't get out of the car, don't open the car, just stay here. I said, okay. There was a group of women sitting on the ground, old women, and they were sitting on the ground right in the dirt, about five or six of them. They were very large. And I was just looking with interest, and I saw her talking to these people, and then I saw her turn around and start to come and see me in the car. And suddenly, I could see that she turned back around because someone had spoken to her. And this person obviously had said something really important, and this woman turned to me in the car with kind of a shock on her face. I thought, what on earth is going wrong? Something wrong? And instead, this new friend that I had made came over to the car and she said, I don't understand this, but don't you embarrass me. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, these women have asked to meet you. And I said, who are they? And she said, they're the Aboriginal women elders. And I was just like stunned, absolutely stunned, because it wasn't something that was possible. So she said, just don't embarrass me and I will translate for you, because they didn't speak English. And when she took me to them, she translated for me, but she said to them, this is this person that's from here from the United States and has been drawn to this place. And she introduced me to each of these women by a name that was Western. They each had another name, but these were their Western names. And one of them started talking, and it turns out that woman was the woman who held the dreaming for the serpent dreaming for that area that ran right through Ayers Rock, through Alice Springs, through other points of interest. And she invited us to go around the rock with her.
I have to interrupt you, Marta. It's time for a station break. So all you avid listeners, stay tuned. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept.
Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, The Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the Law of Attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street. But with free family learning programs, you can get the education you need. Call 1-877-FAMLIT1 for information on free learning programs. 1-877-FAMLIT1.
Check it out. Get your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Marta Getty. She's in the middle of a story, and we're back to Marta.
Great. Well, it was an interesting day with these beautiful women. We had a ute, and everybody piled into the same ute, and I was sitting in the middle in the front seat.
Now, wait a minute. For all of you listeners, a ute is
A four-wheel drive vehicle.
Four-wheel drive truck, usually with an open back. No?
In this case, there wasn't an open back. It was an enclosed back, and there were seats back there.
But it's a truck.
Kind of
Australian.
Like.
Yeah,
sort
go ahead.
Yeah. So there were basically about eight of us in the car. And my friend, my new friend here, said to me to just be very careful. She would translate for me. And this amazing woman sitting next to me started telling stories. We drove around this rock, and she stopped at many sites, and she would say, this is the story, this is what happened in this place, you know, these two boys were playing, and one of them knocked the other one down, and this caused that disaster to happen, or this problem to happen, or resolve that issue, or something. There were all kinds of stories, and I don't want to repeat them on now because it would be way too much. But it was so beautiful. And then at one point, they introduced me to a very special women's site. And in this women's site, I was able to see some things that it was a place of birth. It had been used for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And in that place, I experienced something quite extraordinary with one of the women, the woman who told stories. And it was like an initiation for me. I can't repeat the exact thing that happened because it was not appropriate for me to tell that part of the story. But in that space, we went from storytelling into a place that was absolutely in another world. And she took me by the shoulders and she did something really strong with my body, almost like shaking me. And she pushed me into a space that I cannot really describe, that touched me absolutely at a soul level. And then, when it was over, it was not even 3 minutes, I'm quite sure, they just stand up. All these women stand up, and we walk out. And it was as if nothing ever happened, and I was spinning inside. It totally changed my life, that moment. So we left, and we just went out, and we sat in the desert, and then we went home and had lunch. And they went off on their way, and I never saw them again. I still am reeling from that experience. And then after that, all kinds of things happened. I won't talk about them a lot because we don't have a lot of time left. But one thing was I was initiating two people there, this lovely woman I had met and a friend of hers, into Reiki. And every time I did an initiation, there were these two eagles that came and flew around overhead. Sometimes high and sometimes low. But at another point, in one of the initiations, they asked me if it was the right place. And I said, well, it looks beautiful, but it's not the right place to do this initiation, because we did them all outside. And they said, well, how will we know? And I said, oh, well, the dragonflies will lead us there. And I thought, my God, what's happening to me? I never said things like this in my life before. Out of my mouth falls words that are strange, like, the dragonflies will lead us there. Well, right in front of my eyes coalesced a whole cloud of dragonflies, and we followed them. Now, I would never have done anything like that in my life before that moment in time. So you can imagine, it was quite an experience for me. And still, you know, I could talk for hours about this experience, which I won't do. But what it did do for me is it stimulated something inside of me to look deeper, incredibly deeper, within myself. And it has given me experiences that have stretched over the last 24 or 5 years. And back into that time, I've met people on the other side of the world to whom I was connected that I did not even know that I had a connection. And related to that moment in time.
Huh. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. I rarely share that story with anyone, and now I seem like I feel like I'm suddenly sharing it really publicly. But it's one of those things that I've held inside of myself for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very precious to me. And I don't really try to explain it anymore because I understand, finally, that it was just what was so.
Uh-huh.
And it's what taught me and pushed me. And also filled me with Reiki, because they weren't different. The energy was just the same. It was just a different way of touching into the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty extraordinary. And then we went home and had lunch.
Well, I like that part of the story because I think we often think about extraordinary experiences having to be somehow cloaked in very special circumstances, but that was one of the lessons that Wan Yu Tuan always taught me, that you know, you just go home and have lunch. Like, things are ordinary on some level, and that we have to maintain our presence in our lives, and you can't wait for the holy experience to happen. Or you'll be waiting all the time and it'll never happen to you or with you. That's really amazing.
Well, maybe it's already happening and we don't even know it.
Right.
Because we're so busily searching for it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's another point, too.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, this this part of our practice called Mystic Order has intrigued a lot of people. And as I said, kind of been a carrot at the end of this stick. You know, if we do our healing practice, if we develop enough, if we have enough discipline in our spiritual practice, we'll get to the carrot at the end. But for me, all four of these aspects are present in everything. And one of the things that I've enjoyed in traveling is that certain countries bring out certain aspects, which I find quite fascinating. So it's interesting that for you, Australia has brought this mystic, natural kind of experience to you so intensely.
Yes, yes. And there's a hunger for it, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's really easy to say, I want another one, I want another one, like I'd like another piece of candy. But it doesn't work that way. It's only when we forget to look that something can slip up on us,
mm-hmm,
and occur.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that you inspire me about listening, you know, to yourself and knowing that you have to do things even though you plan to do them otherwise. And I think that's a really beautiful non-attachment to what we might call logical thinking. And I think that's a very important aspect about placing yourself in a mystic kind of place and having the experiences to go with them.
Well, there's a challenge for now, and the challenge is now that I know these things,
uh-huh,
now that I'm more sophisticated in the practice, that I don't spend my time trying to create situations where I can have those experiences.
Uh-huh. Good point.
But continue to allow them to happen if they happen, rather, uh-huh, than making something.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, Marta, thank you very much for this interview. It's been wonderful. And I'm sure the listeners have appreciated your story. And we'll keep it sacred. And we'll use the inspiration for themselves. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to share this way.
Yeah. You're welcome. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.